are back with another interview. This time, we got the chance to talk to the people who make Castlevania Nocturne, the amazing series that it is. We spoke with directors Adam Dietz and Sam Dietz, as well as the series showrunner Kevin Coley. Take a listen.
I am Adam Dietz, the co-director.
I'm Sam Dietz, the director.
I'm Kevin Coley, one of the showrunners.
And we're talking Castlevania Nocturne. thanks, y'all, for taking the time today.
Sure.
I have seen the series through twice now, so I have a lot of questions, and I will try to keep them as brief as possible. But my first question is about the animation of this series. It is closer to some of the animation that we saw in some of the fight scenes at the end of season 4 of the original series. But it's carried throughout the whole series. So a little bit more simplistic and some details out, leading into fights and everything like that. So I wanted to just ask, what changed about the animation style this season and what led to that choice stylistically?
So it came from a few different angles. So this was our first opportunity to do a refresh with the style. Across the 4 seasons of the original series, we kind of like got to slowly evolve things, but we couldn't necessarily like totally redesign stuff or change styles or anything like that. So this is our chance to kind of like look at the style and play with something that felt relevant to the change in the story, as well as just kind of like a refinement of certain things. So starting to move towards more delicate line work, sometimes being a little less heavy-handed with shadows, and instead being more particular with shadow shape for the design. As well as, sometimes, there was like a thought process of trying to make things slightly more animation friendly, and then it ended up actually being harder. So we ended up kind of going the other way with it. That's a funny story. Me and Katie are very like-minded and wanting to do like beautiful artwork and stuff on everything, and then the animators are like, what's with all this stuff? And we're like, sorry.
I was gonna say the Yami Kojima elements have always been present in Castlevania, but I feel like it's even more so here this season. I think especially with Richter kind of being the first Belmont we see that's more of a shonen than, that gruff and tumble, Trevor that we got last time. And the next question I have comes from that. I think Richter is a really good look at style and storytelling, where he is smaller in stature build-wise, but also in a lot of the scenes, he's almost kind of projecting confidence versus actually having it until, the midway point. So let's talk Richter. Like, what led into having him be such a drastically different Belmont and kind of dropping us into the beginning of his story?
Well, he's young.
He is young. No, you're right. I mean, it initial difference is he is young, and his life has been, obviously, when we meet him in the story, his life has been quite different than Trevor's life was. So, I mean, he had his travels with his mom, but he's basically been living somewhat of a quiet life, in France with Tara and Maria. He's dealt with vampires and things like that. And he's, he's strong and he's cocky, but he really hasn't dealt with anything, of the danger or scale that he sort of, is dropped into in this story. So he doesn't want to admit, I don't think, that he doesn't have it covered, right? Like he's got, his strong cockiness, but, as you say, like, there's underneath that, there's some things that he's going to learn.
Yeah. With Trevor, we had a kind of, a fully grown, fully, you know, a very, he was already a fully developed Belmont as far, but he needed to kind of learn to care and to get back into the fight, and, all of that. So we kind of like, enter things on at a different point in his development, than with Richter, who, he is, he's happened to have a bit of a coming of age, story. And so it is a very different point in his development, but it comes at a different angle as well. And so that gives us a different playground with this Belmont than we have in the past.
Adam, do you want to add anything?
I call it a playground. I don't know
what's
why
it?
It's a playground.
Oh, I was asking Adam if you wanted to add anything too.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I would say that like his sort of look, I think, kind of came naturally when Sam and Katie were sort of talking through what to do with Richter, who's had like, as we're loosely speaking, about three or four different designs between Rondo of Blood, the Dracula X update, and then the iteration that's appeared in Smash Brothers as well. There's like slight differences here and there. And so they did something that kind of put some of those elements together, but also made him at home within our universe, I think. The Bishonen part, every Belmont's a Bishonen in some regard, you know? They're all hot goth guys. That's what Ayami Kojima kind of did, right? And so I think that you can't really stray too far away from it, really. It's not an accident. I think we just all naturally gravitate that way.
Yeah, that was sort of the through line we wanted to carry over from the original series. Is still visually, it felt like it was at home, even if it was a refinement. The fun thing with Richter is that talking about Bishonen, he actually gives off a little bit more vibe of the shonen character. He feels a little bit more like what you might expect from a shonen manga or something like that.
Yeah, it's this emotional weakness. He has to overcome it, and then when he does, he gets stronger. That's
true. very much in his blood for sure.
A little transformation moment with his hair. All the pieces. And I think that the style that the show has crafted over time and that decadence that comes with Kojima's initial concept art and art for Castlevania really lends to the decadence of France in a really beautiful way when we get to see the vampire aristocracy, and also the vampire messiah. I wanted to ask a little bit when it comes to building out the villains this season, their stories are really deep, from Ulrich's to Drolta, and even Bathory herself. Can we talk about like how we all built the villains and which ones are y'all's favorites?
I think Drolta is definitely our favorite.
Ulrich's for me, but I love Drolta too.
Ulrich's is wonderful, yeah. For sure.
I would just like to say that for a brief moment, so in the Castlevania Bloodlines design for I think that they mistranslated her name, Elizabeth Bartley or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I played around with the green hair. She just looked like the Joker. So I was like, nah, I can't do that. So I just wanted to put it out there to all the fans.
We tried. We did
I try. Tried it. And I was just like, I'm sorry. I can't.
General, what about you?
Yeah, they're all great. It's hard to pick a favorite. Favorites between, you know, Ulrich's and Drolta and Herzabeth for different reasons, but you know, it's great because they all, like, you care about all of them and you sort of care about their stories. You sort of understand where they're coming from. Like, you know, sort of, it goes back to what we were able to achieve in the original season, original series with Dracula, you know, sort of making, you know, these grounded characters and grounded stories. So we're telling these, you know, fantastical, you know, fantasy stories, but, you know, the characters always feel very, very real. Their stories feel very real.
And I think one of the things I found really interesting about this place in history was it would have been really easy to just focus on France, not on Haiti and the rebellion in Haiti as well. And that brings me the character of Annette, who really is kind of just a romantic footnote in the history of Castlevania, especially in Rondo. And she gets to be a badass, but she gets to be a badass informed by her background and her resiliency. And so I just wanted to kind of ask the question, why choose to actually tackle that type of subject matter in the show? Because a lot of fantasy theories do tend to sidestep it.
I think, you know, it's a credit to Clive and the writers on the show that, Clive is a student of the history. And I think, you know, when we talked about setting the show during the French Revolution and during that time period, you know, it was always about finding the right balance between the history and the fantasy. But, you know, the way that the stories in history are intertwined and the way that, you know, he was able, you know, to bring characters from those different places, the Haitian Revolution, the French Revolution, together in a way that made sense, like both historically, but also, you know, from how we told our story. And again, I think that's, you know, it's one of the things that's unique about Nocturne is how grounded it is in those elements. You know, we don't really, as you said, we don't really shy away from them because it actually, you know, a lot of the history in the story is pretty factually accurate, you know.
Outside of the vampires.
But when it came to, I think the themes of the story, when it started with, you know, French Revolution, I was like, okay, we kind of go with Richter. Okay, 1792, the French Revolution, all that kind of stuff. And then it built from there, and there's a lot of ties historically between the Haitian Revolution and the French Revolution, and all of that fun stuff. So it was all terrible actually, but it's interesting stuff. And so I see how, you know, how Clive made those connections and built something that was grounded in the themes of, you know, revolution and everything in the show.
It's also fun, I think, to imagine, like, in the real history, like, what role vampires would play, like, where they would be, and you know, I think all of that, you know, sort of comes together in a really, you know, wonderful way. I think they, like I said, I'm biased, but I think the team did an amazing job.
Yeah. Castlevania is a funny property where it is it's set in real world history, but there's vampires and horrible monsters and all that kind of stuff. So it gives us
some asshole carrying a whip.
So it's kind of like a weird, funny thing.
Yeah, I think my follow-up question to that too is, so Powerhouse as an animation studio has used folk religion in the past in Sesmanos, like one of my favorites, when it comes to bringing out a culture's spirituality and using it and adapting it into a sense for powers. And we see that with Annette as well, with Ogun, even having the Veves drawn in the floor when she does her spells. What kind of led that to kind of become the core of her power, Haitian Vodou and some of that Yoruba influence? Can you kind of walk through the process of adding that and then also making sure it visually looks distinctive from the magic that we see the speakers do as well?
Well, honestly, that is a Clive question, and Clive did a wonderful job, I think, of educating us, him and his, and the team of writers and, cultural consultants and all that kind of stuff. They educated us on, how to, really, bring that to life. And so it's been kind of like a fun process of, you know, learning a lot of, things, playing around with signs, seeing, and putting them in front of folks who know better than us about these about the culture, and then seeing sometimes their reaction in a really wonderful way when we land on something that you know speaks to them. So that's just sort of one of the things is that's been rewarding is learning and educating ourselves about something that you know is new to us, and part of the reason why I think you know a lot of folks want to explore the space and introduce it to others.
And I think one of the things that really stuck out for me as well is the visual storytelling that the team was able to do, as well as the scripting and the dialogue. There's a lot of visual elements that help put the audience into an emotion, an atmosphere. I think we can just stay on Annette. The moment when her powers are awakening, we see her running through the fields. The animation style is drastically different because you're creating something new for us to fall into as viewers. When it comes to approaching visual storytelling, can you kind of just talk about some of your favorite moments that you can't wait for fans to fall into?
That one, definitely. And that was an idea that Tam Liu, the episode director for 103, had come up with. And he personally animated those shots because he had a vision in mind for it. I was just blown away, and it made me emotional when I was watching the first fully composited take of it, because it was just it really just like drove home the feeling that it needed to. It was great.
Yeah, I worked closely with Tam Liu on that sequence as well, because he wanted something that looked a little bit more amorphous and painterly. I run the post team on top of directing. So like I was able to communicate certain things that it needed and do the initial composites and add displacement effects and texturing that kind of gave it a little bit more painterly look, and went back and forth with Tam because he is very particular about stuff to a T. That's really important, I think, for sequences like that, because like you have to have that vision, I think, for it to land. So
it's for sure a beautiful sequence. It's one of my favorite episodes because I think, you know, there's just a lot of other touches there. I was watching it back the other day and just, you know, sort of looking at the scenes with, you know, Annette in the opera house or Annette and Edward, and then just the lighting choices. The characters, like they have a warmth and a glow to them that just is sort of, you know, conveying all this, you know, as you said, emotion, you know, and combine that with the story and the acting and the music. I think it's really like one of, you know, out of a lot of favorite episodes, it's definitely one of my favorite things that we've ever done for Castlevania.
And Zadwa gave us a wonderful script.
For sure.
I think following up on this, my other favorite character, I mean, they're all my favorites. I love them all. But Orox, we get to see him this season in action, in combat, and he is a fierce warrior. And we also get to learn bits and pieces of him through other people, like Drolta mentioning that he's an Aztec vampire, which I was very, very happy about. And then also having these kind of bedroom conversations with Mizrak, where you kind of see him, this more vulnerable side, to get to know his background. I just wanted to hear from you all, what can we expect from Orox in the future now that kind of the foundation's been set for this, I don't want to call him a villain, antagonist, maybe?
That's one of the things that I love about Castlevania, is that it's a little bit the line is blurred, and that's one of the cool things with Aurox.
He's complicated.
He's definitely, yeah, as the guy said, he's complicated, and that, you know, sort of makes his story interesting. Even, you know, his interaction, you know, in the beginning with Julia is driven, you know, by something that, you know, is deeply emotional to him. You know, he's lived a long time. He's seen a lot of things, and even his perspective on, you know, revolution and what's happening in the story is he comes to it with an experience and, you know, sort of a perspective that the other characters don't have, because they can't. They haven't been there. They haven't been around for those things or been around that long to, you know, to sort of see the impacts of those things like colonialism and expansionism and things like that.
I think my favorite part where it summed up his character for me was when he was supposed to bow to Erzsébet and he keeps his eyes up at her instead of lowering them. Like,
no, he can't do it. He can't let go. Yeah, my single favorite Aurok speech actually is in the sixth episode when he's talking to Mizrak in the hotel room and he's talking about his background. That sequence to me is one of my favorite moments in every season of the show that we've done, and I think that it really sums up his character in a really important way. And I'm infinitely proud of what we did there.
It's just her.
And my final question for each of you to answer is, what do you want people to take away from Castlevania Nocturne once they're finished with episode 8? And now we have to wait for the next, you know, hopefully, what comes next. What do you want people to walk away with?
Oh God, I hope that they want more. I hope also that I feel like we did a decent job, I hope, of making this feel totally connected to the original series and not far removed, and that it feels like a natural progression, but also an evolution of it, you know, and that to me is the most important part. I'm really happy that we got to do a season, four seasons of a show and actually finish it. It was like a thing that I wanted to do from the very beginning. And the fact that we're continuing it, you know, there's a lot of anxiety behind it, but I, you know, once it's in front of us, it really does feel like it does feel connected. So hopefully you'll want more.
I hope that they think that the new, is this a spoiler, like going to be an after release thing?
I can make it an after release thing.
I was just gonna say I hope that they like the new Alucard design and think that he's hotter than he was.
Yes. I'm one person, but yes. That was where the Kojima questions came from.
No apologies necessary.
Yeah, for me I just don't, I mean, the show is visually gorgeous. I feel like it's an evolution of, you know, of what we did before. To Adam's point, it's connected, but it's an evolution. I hope people enjoy the story and enjoy the characters and become invested in them the way that we want them to, and really, you know, want to see more, really want to see them, you know, continue their stories. That would be great.